One of my favourite things to hear, actually, is the story of someone's life who's been changed by Jesus. I find that moving and powerful every time. And this morning, we're going to hear from Amber. And so we're going to hear Amber's story, and Silas is going to host that. We give Amber a cheer. Here she comes.
They're not both called Amber. This is Amber, and this is Cliff. Do you want to be called Cliff or Clifford?
Cliff is either. Call me whatever you like.
Cliff is fine. Okay. So, Cliff. Cliff is intrinsically in part of your story, Amber, isn't it? So, why don't we start? Cliff, why don't you say a little bit about how Amber came to be here?
I've got a friend called Martin Cleef, who's very good at making friends and introducing people to other people. He introduced me to Amber, and he asked me to give her a lift somewhere, which I did. Shortly after that... Yeah, shortly after that, Amber phoned me up and said, "Oh, Cliff, can you take me to church?" And as soon as she said that, God gave me a picture of Silas and Annie. And so I knew to bring her here. And so that's what I did. I brought her here, which...
So... Just for those of you, you know, we've been practicing this in the church, now words. Do you remember we did it last week? And it's expecting God to just speak to us at any time we don't know. So when you said a picture, what, for anyone who doesn't know what that means, what do you mean by that?
I literally saw you and Annie. I just saw your faces. And I just knew this is where I was going to bring her.
So, Amber, how long ago was that? Can you remember?
It's about this time last year, actually. Yeah, I remember coming here, and I sat on the sofa over there, and when I came here, I actually felt this sense of peace, and I asked Cliff to ask for some prayer, and we went... Me, Annie and Silas went to the sofas, and I actually decided I wanted to make a commitment, and I declared, Silas asked me if there's anything to declare, and I did, and then I made the commitment, and after that I felt a sense of peace, but after that I actually, because I prayed, Cliff had a friend who, because I had alcohol problems, I used to drink very heavily, and it's caused me diabetes and physical health problems. And Cliff had a friend who had a similar problem, and he prayed for the thirst to go away, and it went away. And when he told me about the story, because he was helping me this time last year, he was taking me to church and helping me out, and I prayed for the same thing. And I remember going to the hospital. I collapsed my septus, and I had to have an abscess operation taken out of my foot, and I'd also, prior to that, I had two toes taken off, and I remember collapsing, and I woke up in hospital. But when I woke up, it was like there was a man in the next room, and he had his leg amputated. And he told me he was on methadone, and his family were bringing him drink into the hospital. And he asked me if I wanted some, and usually I would have said yeah and joined him. And I actually said no. It was really strange, because I never asked. I smoked as well, and I never asked to give up cigarettes, but I actually didn't want a cigarette. So... when they offered me these things, I said no, and I thought, well, that's strange, you know. And then I thought, you know what? God has answered my prayers. And ever since then, a lot's happened. I haven't drank or smoked for 10 months. Thank you. I actually recently, I mean, I try to get to Hope as many times as possible because I live quite far away, because this was the church where I first came to, and I'll always have it in my heart, and I'd like eventually, maybe next summer when I become a year, to get baptized. I really, that keeps coming to my mind. I want to, you know, I am living on God's path, but I actually want to, the old life gone, and walk into the new life and make 100% commitment to that life. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Just, Amber, you've actually just told an incredible story as if it was kind of sort of just normal. So can I just take you back on it? Tell us about, so you know, most of us just don't just lose two toes.
No.
So can you tell us why, what was that about?
I got diabetes. I used to drink vodka very heavily and smoke a lot of cigarettes, and I ended up with diabetes, and I wasn't looking after myself greatly, you know. I was in the madness of addiction, and I ended up losing one toe. I remember it was in London. I wasn't wearing the right shoes, and it got infected and blistered, and I had to have that one taken, then a second one. And then I got sepsis, a blood poisoning, because I was due to go in. I went into an ASA unit, and there was an abscess where something had got in my shoe. But actually, I actually recently prayed for the diabetes, because my blood sugar was quite high and I've become anemic as well. And I prayed recently with a man called Andy Biddlecombe, and a man from the sanctuary as well. And it's actually gone down to what, like, the average person should be, between four and eight. So I'm quite happy about that. And I've prayed, you know.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I've had prayer for my foot, and it is healing. It's a lot better than it was when I first came out of hospital. So that's great, you know. And I'm just happy to be on this journey. There's lots of things that happened. I've had lots of gifts from God. It's just amazing, and I'm really looking forward to next year, because there's more gifts to come. And
Thank you. Amber, this is incredible. And I just wanted to thank you for sharing what you have. And I wanted to just ask you, Cliff, because I think there's something significant. Tell us a bit more about, you told Amber about someone else's story of healing. Yeah, can you, because this is quite significant.
Yeah, so I actually gave her a second-hand testimony, really. As a friend of mine that some of you would know, Mike Tobin, and I learnt from him, he was prayed for by someone who also was a friend of mine years ago, called Derek Maguire. And at that time, Mike was drinking 4 pints of beer an hour. And he went to Derek, and Derek prayed with him that the taste would go. And after that, Mike bought one more beer, took a sip, didn't like it, and he hasn't drunk since. And that's well over 25 years. And when I told Amber that, she straight away said, I want that. And so we prayed together, and Amber is partnered with God in that.
Thank you. Some of us would be familiar with the teachings of Bill Johnson,
from Bethel, and he very much talks about this, about when someone has, when there's been a kind of miracle in a certain area, is to kind of, the power of that testimony has an impact on the kind of next person. So I know that's something we like to kind of do here, that sort of thing. So, but it does seem quite... I know, Amber, you kind of sort of speak as if this is all very sort of normal. And actually, that's great, because that means your faith for other people and everything is fantastic. So thank you for sharing what you have. And Cliff, thank you for sharing your part in it. And what this is all about is us standing together and seeing what God is doing, and then going with what God is doing. I just want to say one thing. There'll be other people here who might be saying, well, I just wish for me or my partner or my friend that actually they could just suddenly turn off drink like that. But the thing about God is that we can't work out how things happen. But ultimately, he has good plans for us. And there is no such thing as everyone gets healed in one way. He does his work. So I just want to encourage, if there's anyone here thinking, well, I just want that. How God is dealing, in a sense, with whatever situation you're in, you're okay. Okay? It's okay. Because there'll be different stories, but the key thing is we all stand together, whatever the situation is, whether it's instant, things like that, or whether it takes a long time. God, we don't really understand how he does it, but sometimes it's long drawn out, and there's purposes in that, and sometimes it's really instant, and there's purposes in that as well. So, Amber, yes, Cliff.
Yeah, earlier Silas asked me what would God want to say, and so when I was there, I was asking God, and I just got this sense of what he said, that there might be some people here who feel a bit, why hasn't that happened for me, or why has that person got that gift? Well, actually, the truth is, you have that gift, because you're part of the body, and whatever Amber has, you have. She's part of the body. Whatever you see anyone else with, you have it. And I just got that sense. Just thank God that you personally have this gift. So everything you've heard that has changed in Amber, and every gift that has been involved in her being released, is yours.
Thank you. Thank you, Cliff. So, thank you, Cliff. Thank you, Amber. We're going to applaud you all the way back to your seat.
Really good to hear. Thanks, Amber, so much. Thanks, Cliff. And on the healing front as well, I mean, Sarah had a word for us recently, a sense of God encouraging us as a church to keep pressing into praying for healing. We've had some exciting healings over the last couple of years, and a sense of let's keep praying as a church. Let's keep doing. So when you see someone who's ill, offer to pray, and let's keep that momentum going as a church. So we're in this little series on fours at the moment. We're forming fours across the church, these small groups of iron sharpening iron type setting. And we've been speaking on this a little bit for the last few weeks. We've got this little fours guide. And this Amber's story ties in quite helpfully with one dimension of what we see as an important part of our fours, which is your Jesus story. So that's on sort of page. We unpack it a bit more in here. But we wanted to spend a little bit of time this morning, inspired by Amber, thinking about our Jesus story. And so to start with, Alice is going to just take us through a few scriptures on that. So we talk about it. Dan and I are starting a new four. We've got a few others hopefully going to be joining us. And we met on maybe Thursday or Wednesday this week, and one of the things we were talking about was our Jesus story and how we share our story with other people, who we're sharing our story with. And so this is really kind of beaming in on that aspect of Fools. Alice, take us through a few.
Have we got the next PowerPoint? Brilliant. There's this lovely psalm where it says, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, his love endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord tell their story. Those he redeemed from the hand of the enemy, those he gathered from the lands, from east and west, from north and south. And that every one of us in our own way are in captivity, and Amber spoke very openly about hers, and we all have the things that keep us in enmity, keep us entrapped. And there's a moment where Jesus breaks through and delivers us. It's not a conceptual theology, it's a personal encounter of deliverance into a new place. And it's important that we tell that story. There's something about the story being passed down from generation to generation, a community telling their story and an individual and a family telling their story. And Paul picks up on this. He was a deeply religious Jewish Pharisee. As son of a Pharisee, he could train his lineage back 2,000 years to Benjamin, one of the tribes, a great-grandson of Abraham. And he understood this thing of passing it on, of something happens to us when we tell our story as well as the person who hears it. He says, if you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord, which in the context of Greco-Roman culture would be your death testimony, because Caesar was Lord. So you say, Jesus is Lord, you're violating the culture that you're in and replacing it with truth. Jesus is Lord. So there's incredible cost in that one statement. You're nailing dignity, respect, life, potentially employment, relationships, everything in that statement. But if you declare it and believe in your heart, have that confidence that God raised him as a human materially from the dead, you will be saved. Something happens. We are released from the very things that hold us back, primarily fear of man, primarily fear of causing offense, trying to keep our life together and trying not to rock the boat. Something is broken when we start declaring to people who could put us in prison or give us the sack or put us to death, Jesus is Lord. For it is with your heart you believe and are justified. There's an inner change, and Amber showed that just within herself. She just knew that God was real and Jesus had died for her. She just knew that. But then there was a moment where we say with our mouth, we profess our faith and are saved. It's interesting, isn't it? That something happens to us, salvation, wholeness, restoration to us happens when we speak out the alignment we're living in. And then for other people, this just beautiful verse, how then can other people call on the one they have not believed in? How can they believe in the one of whom they've not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? How beautiful it says at the feet of those who bring good news. Consequently, faith comes from hearing the message about Christ. So we release faith to ourselves when we declare what God's done for us. It reminds us, and we release the gift of faith to someone else. We hear that with this thing of mobilizing testimony that tells testimony. Something releases faith. We now can all have faith that God can and does completely deliver us from our unhealthy thirsts. We just know that now because of Amber's testimony, because of Mike's testimony, because of the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman, John 4. He said there's a thirst. You can't quench that thirst. For her, it was perpetual relationship. But I can meet a thirst that will bring in you a spring of living water forever. We now have faith for that for our own lives because faith comes by hearing it from other people. So we go to the next. And then 1 Peter 3, context of suffering. Who will want to harm you if you're eager to do good? I think as a church, we're eager to do good. I think it's a really great posture to always be. It's an eagerness to do good, because if we don't, we will do other stuff. We're eager to do something as humans, so let's be eager to do good, and I think we are. Wilberforce and those guys talked about making goodness fashionable again, and it backs up a life. If we're good, it backs up a life. A life message. But even if you suffer or for doing what is right, God will reward you for it. So don't worry or be afraid of other people's threats. Instead, you must worship Christ as Lord of your life. Again, he's saying that incredibly provocative political statement there. And if someone asks about your hope as a believer, always be ready to explain it. So That's what we want everyone here to be mobilised in our fours and in our normal life, in our workplace, to be mobilised to, but always be ready to give an account for the hope you have. But if you and do it in a gentle and respectful way, keep your conscience clear, don't be a hypocrite, live one life and then talk about Jesus as Lord, that's more damaging than not saying anything. Then if people speak against you, they will be ashamed when they see what a good life you live. There's a wholeness and an integrity and a transparency. They can resist the message, but they can't resist you. And actually what happens is they realise that their life is exposed. Remember, it's better to suffer for doing good if that's what God wants than to suffer for doing wrong. And then this lovely prayer in Philemon, Paul says, I pray that you may be active in sharing your faith so that you may have a full understanding of everything we have in Christ. We receive spiritual blessings when we share our faith. So I think those are risen. Yeah. So what we're going to do now is we're going to split up into groups of three or four, and we want you all to be able to tell the other people in your group your Jesus story in 2 minutes. So that's about 30 seconds for each point, and we're going to time it. When the other day we had a fair, PTA, Hotwell School thing, and they have toffee apples. And Benj, our seven-year-old, took a bite of a toffee apple and lost his tooth. And he was so excited. He was like, oh my gosh, and was blood, and it was so exciting and dramatic. I was like, was that a grown-up tooth, a baby tooth? Can we just... think it was a premature baby tooth, that's fine. And all he wanted to do was tell everyone. And I just looked at him and thought, that's what the church has lost. Something, a wow, an extraordinary, slightly dodgy moment happened. Anyway, an amazing moment in his life happened. And he just shouted in the room, just generally to the head teacher, to everyone. He had no kind of sense of awareness of the cost or what it would mean, or no shame at all. He was just so excited about the fact he'd lost a tooth. So we want to recover that, and we want to be equipped to do it. And so Chris and I are posturing ourselves. We really want to be able to share our faith with someone who doesn't know God every day. We want to be aware that there's someone every day for us to share with. And there was someone, a friend of mine in the community. We started talking actually about similar issues that Amber talked about, as there's a particular behaviour in their partner's life actually, that they were talking about it, and I said, actually I relate to that, that's my issue too. And so we talked about need and brokenness, and then I said, and then she just looked at me and went, I suppose is that where God comes in? And I said, yeah, he's making me whole. I'm more whole because I know his love. It was very simple. Before I knew God, I was very broken, and this was my lifestyle. Then as I've been encountering him personally, his love's been healing me and making me whole. And now I'm more peaceful and joyful. It was that simple. It was in about 2 minutes. And it was that moment that God gave me that day, because someone said, tell me the hope you have within me. And probably beneath the surface is a desperation, isn't there? Because it's very hard to live with that stuff and not know that there's a way out. We know there's a way out, so we can work with it. But if you don't know there's a way out and you think that's just it, it's very tough to live with. So if we get into threes, if we get into threes, and we're going to go on your marks, get set, go. For the extroverts, will love it.
And I think we might just need to bullet point this, you know, if you would rather just say, hey, these were the key features, because we've only got like just under 10 minutes. So you could try and do two minutes each. Yep, go for it. Or if you want to just draw out the key moments.
So after 2 minutes, when it's about 10 seconds to go, I'm going to ring a bell and go to the next person. On your marks, get set, go. Great, well done. Okay, move to the next person. You've given the average advert commercial to get optimum time attention is 30 seconds. And apparently attention span of people has gone down from 12 to 8 seconds. So we need to be absolutely ready for this moment. When this woman said to me, I suppose it's God, isn't it? I had to be ready. Otherwise I would have missed a moment. Okay, next person, go. Brilliant, guys. And we've got one more. 2 minutes. Starting from now. Yeah. Great. Okay. What we're going to do is we're just going to break 10 things that could hold us back. So just shout out and we'll break it, okay? We haven't got much time. I'm going to start. Fear of man. We break that in the name of Jesus. We are not going to live under that anymore. His perfect love casts out fear. We refuse to be concerned about causing offense. And we just get over that because people need to know good news. Okay, let's just trample on that. Next one. What else could stop us? Disappointment, and hope does not disappoint us. Romans 5, God has poured out his love into our hearts. There is no place of disappointment in the kingdom of heaven. There is no disappointment, there's only hope. So that is not a currency we need to deal with in anymore. Anyone else? We'll crush that. Brilliant, brilliant. It's the articulation, isn't it? It's going, what words do I use? Brilliant. So we're going to contend for preparation. We're going to be on the front foot. We're going to have an articulate, considered, gracious, respectful, gentle reason for the hope we have. Fantastic. So we break all of that by being on the front foot and prepared. Anyone else? Someone else? Yep. Brilliant. So what was brilliant about Paul and Jesus and all of them was just they contended for empathy. To the Jew, you're a Jew. Under the Greek or Roman law, you're under that. And to me, I'm just like, I don't really care what it requires. To the vegan, I'm a vegan. To the this, I'm a that. I literally will take the step into their worldview, into the way they see the world. It doesn't, you know, matter if I'm in a good or bad place about God. At that moment, I'm his ambassador, and it's about them, not about me. So we break that self-focus. We break that self-consciousness. It's not nothing to do with us, but when you're an ambassador, it's to do with God mediating through you to them. And so we lay down our lives and our self-focus for that person. Next one, anyone? So fear of getting hurt, so vulnerable, isn't it? You just put yourself out there again and again every day. You put your head above the parapet. But I prefer the cost of obedience over the cost of disobedience, over being a stagnated stream that there's just no outlet for the word of God. There's Jeremiah says, and Paul says it as well, woe to me if I don't preach the gospel. Just as he preaches it voluntarily, but also involuntarily, because something burns within him. And it's a better kind of vulnerability and pain, that one, than the one which goes into self-protection. So we break that fear of rejection. Anyone else over here? Yeah. Addiction in your own life or the other person's life? In your own life, so not feeling worthy because of your own. Your whole lifestyle could be stopping you being aware. Yeah, okay, brilliant. I see it as baby steps. We all need to learn to walk and talk, and it's always a bit messy on the way. But I think some of the greatest evangelists in my experience are the people who struggle the most in obvious ways. This is almost more of a battle over their life. So we'll just stand together to break anything in our life that could prevent us or anyone else being fully set apart to bring the gospel and the good news to other people. Anything else? We've got about four more. Fear of the unknown. Yeah, again, we just break fear. His love casts out fear. We're designed for adventure. We absolutely die when we're not in the adventure. Yes, Carla. Fear of causing offence. Yeah, I just made a decision in my life that I would represent, but I don't want to be offensive from my sin, but I don't mind if the good news offends because it requires humility to receive. So there's two different issues. I will lay down my life and be kind and gentle and honourable, absolutely. But if the actual good news causes offence, it's because it's this issue of pride and humility. Yeah. Judged by other Christians. Of other Christians. Okay, so part of this is we continually need to be in that place of abiding of the good news for us, his mercy for us. That's why in some ways addiction's quite, because it reminds us of who we are and what we need. And that place of vulnerability, if we need to live in a paradigm of mercy. And then we minister mercy. But if we live in a paradigm of judgment, we minister judgment. So we just need to come out of that whole way of thinking and just constantly live in a life of mercy. Yes, Andy? what you've been told it, so it's hard for you to, you just have to crush lies, don't we? We just have to see them as weeds that we uproot, and aware that the enemy might be wanting to say that because he might want to silence the church. Yeah. Time. This, I think, is the last one, and you've absolutely nailed it. There is a moment when we have to say, I reorientate my life for this. There is a moment where we say, there's one life, there's one lot of 24/7, 365, 12 months in a year, however many years in a life, and we are reorientating our life to be available to bring the good news. And it costs everything. Jesus didn't say it costs a bit. He said it costs the whole of that way of life. But we need to come to a place when we're happy and we make peace with that reorientation of our time. So, Lord, I thank you so much that there's something so empowering that happens when we share our faith. Firstly, people come to know you. The good news is spread. Lives get changed. Cities get changed. The gospel changes everything and everyone. And secondly, something happens to us. We're reminded of who we are and who we're becoming. So we give these barriers, we break them under our feet, and we say, this Christmas, we are postured for divine appointments. Let's put that last slide up. I think that last slide there. We are postured for divine appointments. We are aware there are people who you have been calling since their birth to be in relationship with you, and we are your ambassador. We are the person who is going to be a conduit for the message of good news this Christmas. So we call those people into the light. We say we're ready, we're reorientated, we're crushing lies and fear under our feet, and we are ready to bring good news of great joy for all people. We remember Amber's story, that it was good news for her. It brought her joy and peace and healing. And that's just the beginning. This is really, really good news. And for those of us who have forgotten what good news it is, may again that be recovered to us supernaturally, even now. Recover that this is good news. Amen.
That's good. Thanks, Alice. Thank you, Amber. Thank you, Cliff. Fantastic.